You're listening to the Novel Universe Podcast, a monthly YA Lit podcast hosted by Dawn Abram and Elise Martinez, YA librarians from the Chicagoland area. Each episode features reviews and rants on new and upcoming YA books. We're here to help you navigate your TBR pile. What's good, what's bad, and everything in between. I'm Dawn, the criticizer of books.
And I'm Elise, the rejecter of romance.
So turn up the volume, here we go.
So the Prince Awards were
last Monday.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Sure.
So
none of the books that I thought made it, with the exception of Poet X. And I would like to say that I predicted Poet X was going to win like 7 months ago, and I was correct.
Oh, dear God.
So you're welcome, America.
I personally made no predictions, but it sure as hell were not the other books that won. The Poet X I knew would be, at the very least, an honor. I figured it probably would have won, and it did. What was the other? Damsel? I, Claudia. Oh, and A Heart and a Body in the World by Deb Colletti. I liked that book, but I wasn't necessarily sitting here thinking it would, like, garner a prince honor. I mean, I can, now that I think about it, I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But anyway.
I didn't read any of those damn books, so I don't know. I only read Poet X. Like, I didn't read the other ones.
Yeah, like, it came out of left field, because you sure as hell would have read them.
Yeah.
If you were like, oh,
I had never even heard of I, Claudia.
No, same.
And Damsel, I just heard about it 2 days before.
Yeah.
So,
I've talked to other people / librarians, and they were like, yeah, I had Damsel on hold, but I've never heard of I, Claudia. So that was even
further
off to the left.
No one heard of that book.
No. It was interesting to watch, though.
I mean, I think it's great that, and we've talked about this before, how the same books win everything. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, I do think it's great that other books are being recognized and it's not the same book. But at the same time, I thought Sadie was overlooked.
I'm shocked.
She should have got something.
I'm saddened and shocked that didn't get an honor, at least. I mean, that book was out of control good in terms of its depictions of, you know, just sexual abuse and harassment and really what it takes to survive as a female in this world, to be honest with you. It was just the fact that it was overlooked is a little bit, not concerning, but I was like, wow.
Like, what were they looking for?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. If Sadie's not it, then what is?
Yeah.
You know. We're a little salty.
Can you tell?
Tiny bit. All right, so today we are bringing it back full circle to give you updates on our January predictions. A couple podcasts ago, we went through books that we were going to read in January and kind of gave you, we think we're going to give 4 stars, etc. So here we go.
Yeah.
Here's our actualities.
Ugh, I don't have the right order. I don't know what order I went
in. I don't
in.
Either for this one. So just, yeah.
Just
go in order of what you read.
Well, Let's Go Swimming on Doomsday. I predicted I would give that a 4. I did not give that a 4. I gave it a 3. I liked City of Saints and Thieves. Was the City of Saints and Thieves a critical book? No. And neither was this one. And if you follow me on Goodreads, I often mention, and Elise knows this, that I like a more metaphorical, a book that has a lot of symbolism, has some critical thought. And when the writing is on the nose or it's all right there for you, I'm not going to enjoy it too much. And this is probably the biggest reason why I didn't like this book. I probably should go back and say. So it's by Natalie C. Anderson. It is about a boy. His name is Abdi. He is 16. And he has been tasked with infiltrating Al-Shabaab, which is a terrorist group, to spy on them so that he can tell the Americans where their next bomb hit is going to be. So I thought this book was interesting, and you probably will too, because of the topic. The topic is not something that most of us are familiar with, and so it's a chance to read another teen story, somebody else's story. And the title is great, the topic is great, the cover is great, but the execution was a big problem. It's so this kid's situation is unique. I just told you he is supposed to be infiltrating this terrorist group to find out where the next bomb is going to go, is going to explode. But And so the good thing, the cool thing about this book is that it's told non-linearly. So when the book first starts off, he's putting on the suicide jacket. And then it jumps back and forth to a couple of months before that, and then a couple of months after. And so that's cool. We don't really get it told from start to finish. But when we see him after, in the aftermath, you know, he's dealing with it. And he's paranoid. He's withdrawn. He's sad. But the way he's dealing with it was, could have been any kid dealing with depression or grief because their parent passed away or physical abuse. Like, the way he was dealing with it was not unique to his situation. It could have been any teen story. And so that's the problem. If I'm going in to read a book about a kid from Mogadishu who has been training with Al-Shabaab, I want to know how it affected him. And it should be specific to his situation, but it wasn't. It could have been any teen dealing with grief or loss or abuse or anything. And that was the biggest problem.
You weren't looking for that.
No, I wasn't looking for that. Yeah, there were some other issues. It was like way over the top. And I was telling you, I'm like, okay, his whole circumstance is realistic, but I feel like an American army would not put a 16-year-old as a spy to infiltrate a huge terrorist group. Like, you're going to put a 16-year-old in Al-Qaeda? No. Like,
I don't know.
And she did say that it was for entertainment value. Like, that was not real.
Sure.
And that's fine, but the way it was done was just ridiculous. Like, he goes from this really, like, for most of the book, I thought he was 13 because he acts like a child. But this kid is 16. He has had to use AK-47s. He has killed people. He has seen people killed. And he acts like this little child. And then at the end of the story, he's like, bringing down the Al-Qaeda. No, that is not a thing. So, yeah, I mean, if you want to put this on your shelf, I say go for it, because you do learn a little bit about how these boys are being brainwashed and the situation that's going on over in Africa. So for that reason, okay. But if you're trying to do like a book club or something, no, there's no critical.
There's a lot happening in that book.
Yeah. It was long as hell too. It was way too, it was like 430 pages. And I'm like, no, this did not need to be 400. It was just, it was a mess. Sorry.
Yikes. Okay. mine, I'll go to one of the ones that I know you read as well, because maybe you can tag on at the end here, but, the other book that, or well, my first book is A Curse So Dark and Lonely.
I can't believe we started with this garbage.
Spoilers, no, I'm just kidding.
Oh God.
So I predicted in the January predictions that I was not going to like it because I had already started reading it and it had already begun to taper off. And that prediction was correct. I don't normally rate books that I DNF, but I am going to for the sake of this podcast, and I'm going to give that a 2 stars. It is not the worst book that I've ever read, but it is certainly
close. Yeah. It's very close. And what makes it even worse was that we were reading this together, and the first 5 chapters were great.
The first 5 to 7 chapters were absolutely, I was like, if she keeps this up, I'm going to be shouting this book from the rooftops.
Yes.
I'm going to be an evangelist for this author. Like, it was really unique and interesting and different. And then the middle of the book hit, and I've seen this happen so many times in fantasy and, like, retelling authors where they're not really sure where to take the characters. I didn't get the sense that she intimately knew her characters and their motives and their history and their direction. And so she kind of kept cycling through the same couple thoughts.
Yeah.
The characters just kept having the same thoughts. Oh, he's a prince and he's proud and I'm going to just do what I want because I can. And my cerebral palsy isn't going to hold me back. But it didn't, like, she had this, what is cerebral palsy technically considered? It's not a disorder. It's not a disease.
It's
just
when you're
born, neurological.
If something happens when you're born.
It's a disorder, I suppose. I'm sorry if I'm using the wrong words, but you know, it never became part of the book in a way that I was really expecting it to or hoping that it would. Again, like you said with this previous book that you read, I wanted to learn something. I wanted to be put in this person's experience and, you know, live life through their eyes for a little bit and really, what does it take to live as someone with cerebral palsy? It literally is not even part of the plot.
No.
She mentions it a couple times. You know, she talks about how she's had to overcompensate in this area, but never anything past that. And, like, he, the prince slash the beast character, because this is kind of a, this is not kind of, it is a Beauty and the Beast retelling. The beast character is always like, oh, she's so strong. It's like, well, that's self-evident. Like, yes, if, yeah, she's, okay, just come on, guy. Like, it was just bad. The dialogue got bad. The character that I was kind of hoping would be this, like, double agent was just not, like, nothing ended up kind of going the direction that she set it up in the beginning as.
Well, it's about to be spoiler time, so if you haven't read this book, I would say stop it right now. We're about to spoil a little bit of it. Because this book was a hot-ass mess. I was so upset because it started off so well. And we get this, like you said, and it was long as hell.
Oh my God.
It was like 600 pages. And
talk about the blood in the room. Can we talk about that real quick?
So she, the it's the Beauty and Beast thing. He has to find love to break the curse. And he basically tells her, which I thought was cool. He's telling her this is the curse. And she's like, well, I'm not going to fall in love with you. Great. And so she's like traipsing around through his big ass house. And she just sees this room with all this blood.
It looked like it looked like someone who'd been torn apart in there.
Like several people.
Like
the way it made it seem.
Yes, there was so much blood. She's like, this cannot come from just one person. And so like she has this completely realistic reaction to that experience. And it is never explained. Like barely.
It's just, yeah, he's like, oh, that's my blood. Because the Lilith lady just, like, likes to torture him. And that was horrible. Like, she was a horrible villain because she just likes to torture him because he invited her in and, like, did her dirty.
There
like, wham,
no...
bam, thank you, ma'am. And that's it? That's her whole motive? I mean, sure.
So,
that's a good motive, but not the way it was executed.
To me, that is a gold mine for authors that want to retell this story. That's where I'm looking for the difference, because we know nothing about the original, like, witch that comes. She just, okay, they turn her away. Yeah, that would piss anybody off, but, like, what? It's so vague. That's like, if you're going to keep that vague, you're already doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah.
Like, I really wanted to learn more about the, like, struggle behind all of that. And her name is Lilith. Like, that's a historically loaded name. And to not explain anything of who this person is, it was like...
Well, that was at least that book's problems.
Definitely.
It was... It dragged. And then it was trying to be funny when she was, like,
oh,
the princess of D.C. It's because she was from Washington, D.C. And...
It was bad.
I
felt at some points throughout the book that this was trying too hard to be similar to... A Court of Thorns and Roses.
I could agree with that.
You know, and
yeah.
I feel bad because I read the, I always like to read the author acknowledgments in the back and like their little note about what they're giving to the world. And it like makes me really sympathetic to their books. And because these are people and I'm like, you know, if you were able to get a book written and published, you have a very... Like, you're very talented. You're skilled. Clearly, you were able to advocate for yourself. You know, the fact that you were able to sit down and do something like that is great. So I hate to, like, sit here and just shit all over someone's, like, life project, especially because she was like, my husband just asked me, you know, when was the last time you wrote anything because you enjoyed it? And she's like, that's what I'm going to do, and this is the book that came from that. I'm like, oh, damn. Now I can't be mad. But, like, it just wasn't...
I mean, you're given reasons. I think we're given valid reasons.
We are.
It just,
you know, I just...
The execution was just... And I'm looking back at my review to try... Because I also gave it a 2. I didn't predict it because I'd already read it when we recorded it, so I already knew that I didn't like it. But the main character kept telling the Beast that he's arrogant. You're so arrogant. And he was never arrogant.
No, he wasn't.
I don't understand where she was getting this from. It's like the author was trying to make you hate the prince when he wasn't an awful person.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a guy who was cursed, and he was tired of being cursed. And I didn't understand the world either.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't understand how it was only 12 years his time, but he had turned 18, 30 times. I couldn't understand any of that either.
There was a lot of confusion with the, like, how the magic of it all worked. You know, where was his household staff? Like, there was just, nothing was really explained satisfactorily. So you're kind of just, like, ambling through the plot, hoping that at some point it will be explained.
It didn't.
And people are liking this book. Like, it has decent ratings on Goodreads. So somebody out there is enjoying this. But I'm not even sure if I can see a teen liking this. Like, it, like in the context of YA fantasy, this is not new.
No. Another spoiler bit that really got me is that the whole time she's trying to get back home. She's trying to get back home. Her mother is dying of cancer. She needs to go back home. Her brother is in trouble because he's in with some bad dudes to get money.
They were in the middle of a drop when she was taken. Like, she's got a very high stakes.
Yeah.
Which, again, made the plot very interesting.
And she finally gets home. Finally.
Oh, yeah.
And then her mother dies, and that's it, and she goes back. And it was literally 3 pages long. I'm like, really? This is the whole point of you wanting to go back. She even asked Lilith to do it. She was so desperate, and she finally goes back. Her mom dies. Let's hold hands and have her a funeral. Now let's go back to freaking Neverland. I don't even know where the name of the town was anymore. Like, it was.
I'm just shaking my
the
head.
The ending of it was just like out of Game of Thrones. It was like she it. Oh. And then there was one chapter. I cannot. It started with, I woke up swooning.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I woke up swooning. Was she, like, laughing when she wrote those first words in that chapter? Like, okay. I think we've done enough with this poor book.
Yeah, we have. But it just,
If you're looking for a good fantasy, this is just not.
No.
This is not it for you. It's not.
Yeah. And the reason that our dislikes are so animated is because we were really given something really great in that first quarter of the book, and then, damn. And that always makes me more.
Yeah.
It makes me hate it more.
I'd rather a book be mediocre all the way through than to start off really well and then go bad at the end. That's the worst. That's worse than being mediocre all the way
through.
Okay. So my next one is Ship of Smoke and Steel by Django Wexler. And I said I was going to give it I predicted a 3, and I gave it a 3. So this book,
You were like, I like this, and then I was shocked to see that.
I know, and then it was, so, okay. So, basically, it's about this girl, Isoki, I don't know. She is kind of the boss of her ward. So it's kind of like Hunger Games where they're like in caste system. The caste system is like Hunger Games. The book is not. And she is on the 16th ward, which means the first ward is where all the wealthy and emperor lives. So she is, they have like a magic system and they're called Mageborn. And her specialty is military. So she can fight really well. But if you're an adept, then you're extra, extra special, which of course she is. And she also has a sister who she wanted to get her sister out of this horrible situation. So she has secretly moved her up higher to like the 5th ward or something. I don't know. But she's a secret because she knows if the emperor finds out that she's an adept, then she's going to get taken to fight for the emperor. And she doesn't want that. She wants to be independent. Of course, guess what? He finds her, and his henchman is like, look, there is this ghost ship, and we need you to get on this ship, because every year this ship comes by, and we have to give them a mage kid. If we don't, they're going to kill us all, and we are tired of that, so we want you to be that one person. Get on there, kill the captain, come into the ship, and give us that army. Okay, fine. Problem number one, here comes the pissiness of me in this book. That happens in chapter 5. This whole book is about this stupid ship. And they only mention the ship 3 times. And quickly. Like, the first time, there's like, oh, there's this mythical, and everyone thinks it's a myth. Like, no one believes in the ship. They think it's not a real thing. But everybody's afraid of it because they say it steals souls. So that's mentioned briefly. Then she goes to visit her sister, and her sister's just mumbling about it briefly. And then when she gets captured, that's when you get the info dump of the ship. And so now I'm supposed to be like have all this tension and like, oh my God, what's going to happen on the ship? No, because the author doesn't give you any time to like find out about the ship, to be like, you know, excited for it, what's going to happen. There's no mystery because you don't get any time. So she gets on the ship the ship is weird because it's like as big as like Rhode Island. It's supposed to be huge. I couldn't wrap my head around the size of the ship, but there's all these magic people on the ship, and as soon as she gets on there, what do you think the first thing would be to ask? If you were being put on the ship and you think it was a myth, what's the first thing you're going to ask when you get on there?
Was the captain?
No.
I don't know.
Why am I on the ship? What is this ship for? It's a mythical ship. Nobody knows what the ship is for. Nobody knows what it does.
Oh,
not at
yeah.
any time does she fucking ask, what
was,
is this ship
and
about?
And I was going to ask you, what is the ship? Where
exactly. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
They don't say. They don't
Even
say.
Even when they tell her to go
no.
and take it for them, they
no.
don't know what it is?
No.
Oh, that's a problem.
She gets on the ship and she's immediately, like, put in, like, a group of people. I mean, I figured out what the ship is for, but I shouldn't have to. I should be told, because if I am on put on this ship, my first question is, why am I here? What is the purpose of this? No one, unless I missed it, which I don't think I did. So she gets put with this group of people, and their first mission is to fight these big ass crabs. So there's like these huge monsters. I know. I'm sorry,
oh,
I did realize that sounded weird, but I have been
I'm
living
getting,
with this
like,
stupid book.
I'm getting, like, Pirates of the Caribbean
it is,
3 vibes.
It is. It
like,
is.
What?
It totally is Pirates of the Caribbean. They
Ooh.
Have to fight these, like, monstrosities
oh,
of
God.
Crabs.
Oh,
and
no.
so on the way to fight the crab, this other beast happens along. And, of course, she kills it. And, of course, no one else has ever been able to kill this thing but her. So automatically, she's,
I
like, amazing.
That.
And week one, she's only been on there for a week. She has a whole year to kill the captain and take the ship. Week one.
So
she's like,
batting all night.
She is the chosen one, man. And it is week one. And so she... It's like, okay, I need to be the leader of this crew that I have here. And she was like, hey, man, you're the leader. I want to be the leader. I need to be the leader right now. He's like, no. She's like, fight me on it.
Dawn's busting out the hey, man.
And she's like, Ooh. She's like, fine, I'm going to fight you for it. And of course, she beats him. So now she's really the bomb. And then she gets her and her girlfriend. Well, I'll get to that in a second. She gets pushed overboard into the, like this desert where no one survives. Guess what? They survive. So now this is week two. Week two. She is jamming. I'm like, this is so unrealistic. Back to the girlfriend. The whole time she is like, banging dudes and all these dudes, and now all of a sudden
she's
we are
a
in love with the woman, and it comes out of nowhere, and now it's this romance, and I'm like, oh Jesus, no, let's it just didn't land well for me. And then the ultimate thing that really, it's not a really 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 thing, but it was minor, but it pissed me off, not pissed me off, but it just annoyed me. It was so you remember in what's that damn book, Dashner, Maze Runner.
Yeah.
In the Maze Runner, he has a made-up swears
yeah.
language.
Did they do that here?
They did that in this book, and it was like, rut. We're rutting.
That's
Come
not,
rut me.
No, that's an actual word.
Is it?
Yeah. When you're rutting in a ditch, that's what you're
well,
like,
he used
like,
it as
yeah.
the F word.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
It's very vulgar.
Well, he used it as hell and shit
oh.
and fuck. He used it for all the things.
Yeah.
But it's like... but so he uses this word. It's the only swear word that is made up. However... Dashner uses it because he wants to keep his book appropriate for middle school, so he has to make up
yeah.
swears.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
book has all kinds of banging, people are naked, there's human trafficking, there's abuse of girls being sold into sex slavery. It's not on the page, but it's mentioned. This is a very high school book. Just say the word fuck. Why do we need to say rut? I did, and it was so, like, jarring. I want to rut him right now. They're over there rutting right now. And it became a joke.
I am embarrassed. I think I'm blushing.
I'm like, oh God, with this word. So,
oh no,
no. I mean,
back
if
away.
You, if, the biggest thing I didn't like about this book is that I like a character driven book. I don't like a plot driven, and this was like a battle on every page. And it was almost as if this author, who has only written adult fantasy thus far, he's like, oh, well, I must put a battle and a fight in every chapter to keep the teens interested. You don't.
Keep the teens.
You don't. You really don't. And so if you like a fast-paced info dump story, great. It
I
did
like
have diversity.
An info dump story. No, I'm just kidding.
You do like info
no.
story?
No.
Oh.
It just
I was about to say,
funny.
This is for you.
Like, why would you self-identify? I like info dump. No.
The diversity was great, but other than that...
Yeah.
It was just, it became a joke after a while. So.
Tea for trash? What
tea
did you
for
rate
trash.
This?
I originally rated it a 3, and I still gave it a 3. I did enjoy 40% of it, but after a while, you start seeing the holes. You know, when every little thing...
That was the longest plot synopsis that I think you've ever given.
I had to, man. It was awful.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That... When Runaway. You came back and said that you were liking it, I was like, this book? Because the cover does not do it any favors,
no, it
doesn't. That's for sure.
I don't read books by the cover, so...
Yeah, I tend to. I mean, it's not the only criteria,
yeah.
But I'll look at a book and be like, nah. All right. My next book that I'm going to discuss is The Gilded Wolves by Roshni Chokshi. I predicted nothing because I was already reading it and didn't want to say anything. But I secretly knew I was going to love it. I gave it a 4.5 because this was one of the most... She wrote a plot that I've never read before. Let me backtrack. She takes something that we're very familiar with, so like a heist, but makes it new, unique. The treasure's not like the same bullcrap that is like always being sought after. And what really was very compelling about this book is the ultimate question that I think she's trying to raise in this book of like, who owns culture? Who owns the past? And who owns these artifacts that basically give us clues into how humankind have developed and learned and organized and keep ourselves organized and move forward and progress? And that was very interesting. So she combines a lot of different things. She's like working off of the biblical mythology of the Tower of Babel, however you say it. It's people say it differently. But her premise in the story is that when the Tower of Babel fell, someone took some of the stones and spread them throughout the earth as a magical token to use to create anything. Like, you can manipulate the weather, you can manipulate metal, you can manipulate physical, anything physical or metaphysical anyway. And there are these families in each major society. So, like, there's a European one, there's, like, a, you know, Chinese-Japanese group of families. And they are charged with protecting these pieces that have been buried in an undisclosed location. And obviously there are people trying to find it so that they can literally become God.
Sounds like the Infinity Stone.
What's the Infinity Stone?
The Infinity War? The Gauntlet? I just watched it
the Gauntlet.
Anyway, sorry.
Sorry. I'm not a Marvel person. Don't know. But anyway, in terms of YA literature, it was a very unique book. I loved the characters. She wrote a character that may or may not be autistic. There's no confirmation that they are, but when you like read about how they are trying to interpret people's social behavior and like what they say and their jokes, she seems to be on the spectrum, and I thought that was very interesting. I have not read a book. I know that there are books out there with autistic characters. I just haven't read any personally, let alone in a fantasy novel.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. The romance was phenomenal. I personally really like her writing, but this book was very different in how she writes. I've read everything that she's written, and she normally likes to do this like really kind of metaphorical, dreamy language. And this, I think she realized that if she did that, this was going to get very complicated, very confusing, very fast, and that was a good choice for her. It's straightforward, but not in a boring or like too obvious way. She's not a tell versus show author, and I always like when authors really kind of force you to have to go back to this like epilogue that's very vague, and as the book continues you're like, oh shoot, I need to go back and get that information again, because it kind of widens the plot now. It had a very surprising ending. I'm looking forward to book two. That's all I'll say about it. I don't want to rant too long about this one, but highly recommended if you like historical fantasy, if you like character and plot-driven books, and if you just are into all of that. I have nothing else to say about that. Great
cool.
book.
Okay, my next one is Black Enough, Stories of Being Black in America. I predicted a 3.5. I actually gave it a 3. First, let me premise by saying I am black, so I don't want to hear it. The reason why I gave it a 3 is because there are 17 stories and I only liked 4. So that's not even close to being half. And the reason why I only liked 4 is because the other stories were way too similar. And by that, I mean most of the stories were about a black teen who was from upper or middle class family who goes to visit their quote unquote ghetto cousins. And they're like, you talk white, you're not black enough, woo, whatever. And it was a lot of that in a different setting. And yes, as growing up as being a black kid, that was one thing that I faced, but there were so many other things. And I was just hoping that the authors, it's an anthology, so I was hoping that the other authors would hit on other things about being black in America. And it just wasn't. There were some that were close, like, what, and I'm not biracial, by the way, but there are a lot of biracial teens. And I kept waiting for a story of a girl that's raised by a white woman. And her mom's white and her family's white. And she has to go visit her white family, but she has nappy hair and brown skin and she looks different. There was a story like that, but it wasn't about that. And it was just like a missed opportunity to go into this girl's story. Or even having a white father or something, just racially mixed or something. So that was a missed opportunity. There are a lot of immigrants in this country, and there was one story where a girl, I believe, was from Trinidad or something, somewhere in the Caribbean, I can't remember. And she's at a club with her cousins, because it's always cousins, and she's being groped. And so she kind of flashes back to when she was a teen in Trinidad and how girls are treated if they are perceived as easy. And although that is timely, that could have happened here. Like, it wasn't unique to Trinidad. So once again, I was like, oh, I want something unique to her experience living in the Caribbean, not something that I could read about here. So the best stories were, no shocker, Renee Watson, Jason Reynolds, Evie Zaboy, and Kekla Magoon. They had the best ones because they were really different. But is it an important book? Yes, I think teens who are not black will learn something about what it is like to be black in America. I think black teens will see themselves in this book, which is great. But as for me, I was looking for more varied stories and it just wasn't there. So.
All right. My last book is The Vanishing Stare by Maureen Johnson. This is book 2 in the Truly Devious series. I predicted that I would like it, and I predicted that I would give it a 3.5. I ended up giving it a 4 stars, which I was very shocked to feel by the end of reading that. It was way better than book 1 because she did solve one of the murders. There were 2 murders by the time book 1 ended. Neither of them had been solved. One murder had taken place long before the setting of that book. So it took place in 1930. The book is set in modern times, and this girl was trying to solve this murder at the school she goes to, where the murder also took place. So that murder was solved in book 2, and it was interesting. So that really deepened the plot. It kind of gave the book a little bit more substance. The other murder, we're still not sure. It's still pending. But that didn't bother me as much, again, because you need, if this is a mystery, like, you gotta give a resolution to something that you're setting up. I'm getting to know the main character better, which, again, was a complaint that I had for book 1. Stevie is this, you know, teen who has a really sharp mind. She's really into detective stories. She wants to be a detective. And she goes to this school that's kind of a learning incubator for teens with really special niche interests, but who are also simultaneously like geniuses. So that would be her. There's someone else there who's a writer, someone who's like an engineer, you know, it's one of those places. And she is there to solve the murder of this other girl and a couple of other people that took place at the school years and years and years ago. And that's about it. Some of the secondary characters were really interesting. I'm still not interested in the love interest. He is not fleshed out as a character, and that's where the author kind of needs to step it up in book 3. He's a stereotype right now, and I'm looking for that to change because the other characters are not. Like, she's doing a really good job of keeping everyone pretty realistic. If there is something stereotypical about it, she's changing their character in a way that I find really interesting, including the main character. But this love interest, he's like, He's the son of a Donald Trump-esque politician, and that's a spoiler if you haven't read book one, sorry. But he's trying to, like, do everything that he can to rebel and, like, distance himself from his father and make his father's life difficult. It's like, okay. But in the same sense, he's therefore not letting anyone close to him. So it's like, I don't really know who this guy is. I don't really see why she likes him. Because he's hot? Okay. Whatever. I don't know. I'm not interested in that. I kind of wish that wasn't part of the story. So yeah, she leaves the school in book one. She comes back in book two and gets shit done. And I really liked it. Plot was deepened. Her character was fleshed out a lot more. And I'm looking forward to book three. Halfway through, I was like, I don't like this. I'm not sure if I'm going to read book three. I didn't know there was a book three. I thought it was a duology. It's not. I think it's a trilogy. There may be four books. Who the hell knows at this point? Jesus. I know. But I will read book three. By the end of the book, I was like, okay, that was unexpected. I'm pretty pleased with that ending. So, yeah, Vanishing Stair was pretty solid.
All right. Well, my last book, I did not give a prediction because I had already read it. And it is Girl King by Mimi.
Ooh.
Mimi.
Mimi.
Mimi. Mimi.
Mimi Ito?
I don't think so. Mimi. I'm looking on my Goodreads.
Oh, boy.
It's two letters. You. Mimi, you.
Mimi, you.
This already has a 3.67 on Goodreads. Yeah, it has tanked. And here's why. So, it starts off like Gilded Wolves, where there's this ominous prologue, and you're like, ooh, what's this about? And then it starts to clear up as you read along, but she didn't do it right. So, anyway, it's about the main character's name. I've already forgotten her name. I'll remember in a second. Let me go back. She is the, her father is the king, obviously, Lou, and she is waiting to hear who is going to be the next king, because her father, who is the king, is dying, and he is going to announce his predecessor. She thinks it's going to be her. She also has a sister named Min, and so they're kind of waiting to find out if it's going to be Lou, and it is not. It is her cousin, so it's her mother's nephew, and who has been named to be the king. And she's, of course, very upset about it because she's been training to be the girl king. And she's like, I don't accept this, so I want to duel you for the honor. And he's like, fine, but of course he cheats. And so she gets told that, I'm gonna kind of spoil it and kind of like rant about it because I gave it a 2. It was awful. She gets told, he's cheating, he's going to kill you, run. So she runs, and it becomes a travel book, a travel story. So she meets up with this other character and is told in three perspectives. Lou, her sister Min Yi, and this boy, I can't remember his name, but he's a shapeshifter. And he finds her, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna help you. And I've kind of forgotten because it was just not a good book. But what I didn't like about the book is you have these stereotypical characters. So you have Lou, who is like, it's almost like Game of Thrones. She is the Arya character. She is kind of squatty and, but she's
squatty.
Beautiful, but nobody knows. She doesn't know she's beautiful. Everyone can see it in her, but she's tough and
any
she doesn't want
sign
to be
of the whole Mary Sue situation. I'm already backing out the door.
I wouldn't say she's full Mary Sue, but she's
but
teetering
she's,
on the
she's
edge.
Teetering,
she's
yeah.
a teetering. Her sister Min is the beautiful one, yet the dumb.
Oh my
and
God.
But
stop
she
with
has,
that?
I know. But here's the kicker with her, which is stupid. She has these powers that she doesn't know. And so what her powers do, they kind of talk to her and tell her to do things. But it's really just a conscience. That's all it is. So she'll be, like, chilling, and her mom is awful. And she'll see, like, this hairpin that her mom loves, and her voice will tell her to steal it, and she'll take it. Okay, that's not a power. That just means you have a conscience. Or she's, like, worried that her maids are, like, gossiping behind her back. Once again, that's human. That's not a special power. But anyway, it kind of grows into her, and then she can, like, kill things. I don't know.
That's so then, literally what Ted Bundy said was telling him to kill women. Like, that's weird.
We just watched the Bundy tapes. That's why we said that. So then the mom is kind of the Cersei character because she wants to be powerful, but she's this woman and she can't do anything because she's a woman and she has to kind of connive and manipulate behind her husband's back.
That makes no sense because why would have the two girls expected to be emperor or king or whatever if women didn't have power?
But she hated them. And there's a reason why she hated. She hated Lou. There's a reason why. I'm not going to say it's a spoiler. She loved men, but she wanted her nephew to be emperor or king so that she could be the puppet master. She was like, I'm just going to, So she wanted to rule through him, basically. So then this guy, he is a cartoon villain. He's just like, he's the Stannis. He's like, I foretold.
Just blindly loyal to this, like, prophecy
Yes. And the prophecier is the Melisandre character. And he's like, but you know he's like lying. No, it's a man. Okay. It's a wizard or whatever. But you know he's lying for his own benefit. Now, I don't think Melisandre is doing that in Game of Thrones. But
separate podcast.
I know. But anyway, he's like a cartoon villain, and he's just evil for evil's sake. He has no character development.
That's awful.
And yeah, there are all these other characters thrown in, and then the sister, this is what killed me. So the sister has to marry the new king because you have to keep it in the family. And so he is, he's like, oh, you're beautiful. He's feeding her all this bullshit. And she's eating it up. And she's like, I must go with him because he loves me and he thinks I'm special. And we're like, oh my God, you're killing me, man. Because as the reader, you know. And you know she's going to grow. But you have to wait through 500 pages for her to figure it out. And it's like, I can't anymore. And then one other thing that pissed me off is, this is a fantasy, so, you know, they don't have technology. It's you know, back in the day. Mm-hmm. But it's also very misogynistic. And you have these soldiers who are rapey. And so while most of the time they're like, I'm the princess and I want to be the one to lead. You know, they're very proper speak. And then you have these soldiers who are like, hey, girl, bring that ass over here. Like, that's how they talk. And it, like, totally takes you out of the story. And I'm like, it wasn't exactly what they said, but it's kind of...
Like, bring that ass over here.
I'm like, if this is supposed to be said...
That's the title of this podcast episode.
It totally is. And so it just, like, totally takes you out of the story. It's like, wait. Oh, and another thing that I thought was really funny, is that, which I appreciated. So Lou, who's the girl king, and I told you she's off with the shapeshifter. The shapeshifter is in love with some other girl. Which was really sweet in the beginning, but it just kind of falls to pieces. I don't know what the point of that was. And so Lou is like, hey, you know what? I need some ass. Let's do this. And this poor kid is like, but I want to be in love with a woman. And she's like, oh, whatever. I need some booty. Let's do this. And I appreciated it because they're on the road. They ain't. What else they got to do? And
for sure.
Some people didn't like that, but I thought it was hilarious.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's too long. It's just
that book was huge.
It's 432 pages. It's just way too long, and it
I
just
I saw the size
drags.
Of that, and then I saw those reviews. That's what she said. And then I saw the reviews, and I was like, nah.
Yeah. No. I was really excited for it, but the good thing that has going for it is it's set in a Mongolian type of a world, and they do have a lot of tradition because she gets married, and so there's a lot of like tradition and ceremony, which was really beautiful. But aside from that, it was just, I would say, read Gilded Wolves. Like, it just no, it's not worth your time for that huge book. Sorry,
that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have any other predictions?
I do not.
All right. Well, how do you think the predictions matched up? Were they way off? Mine were kind of all over the place.
I had a very shitty January, and I'm not happy about it. Like, I did not read anything over a 3.
A couple of my books, I was like, oh, that turned out to be better than I thought. But The Curse of the Dark and Lonely, I was not expecting to have a 2 stars this early in the year. So
I think
that's surprising.
You know what's funny is that in my Goodreads review, under A Curse So Dark and Lonely, I have in my review.
I saw a lot of caps in that review. There was some anger when you wrote that.
I was angry. We're not off to a good 2019. That's the first sentence.
Yeah.
It was the first book
Yikes.
I read in 2019, and it sucked.
Yeah. I don't know. There were some really, really highs. Like, Gilded Wolves was phenomenal.
That's good.
Yeah. That's so far my best of the year. It's too early to call that, but it's going to be on my list, I'm sure. But King of Scars, we both said we were going to read, and we haven't been able to read that yet.
I just got it today in the mail. So that'll be my next read.
Mm-hmm. All right. We will see you next podcast. Bye.